And this will be taken from the book of Matthew, chapter 24, verse 1 to 35. Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came up to him to call his attention to its buildings. "Do you see all these things?" he asked. "Truly, I tell you, not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down." As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. "Tell us," they said, "when will this happen, and what will happen? What will be the sign of your coming to the and to the end of the age?" Jesus answered, "Watch out that no one deceives you. For many will come in my name, claiming I am the Messiah, and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of birth pains. Then you will be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you will be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other. And many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. So when you see standing in the holy place the abomination that causes dissolution, spoken of through prophet Daniel, let the reader understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let no one on the housetop go down to take anything out of the house. Let no one in the field go back to get their cloak. How dreadful it will be in those days for pregnant women and nursing mothers. Pray that your light would not take place in the winter or on the Sabbath. For then there will be great distress, unequaled from the beginning of the world until now, and never to be equaled again. All those days had not been cut short. No one would survive, but for the sake of the elect, those days would be shortened. At that time, if anyone says to you, "Look, here's the Messiah," or "There he is," do not believe it. For false messiahs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. See, I have told you ahead of time. So, if anyone tells you, "There he is, out in the wilderness," do not go out. Or, "Here he is, in the inner rooms," do not believe it. For as lightning that comes from the east is visible even in the west, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Wherever there is a carcass, there the vultures will gather. Immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. The star will fall from the sky, and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. Then will appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then all the peoples of the earth will mourn when they see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. and he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. Now, learn this lesson from the fig tree. As soon as its twigs get tender and its leaves come out, you know that summer is near. Even so, when you see all these things, you know that it is near, right at the door. Truly, I tell you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away. The word of the Lord.
Well, if you're here for the first time today, what a day you've picked. Some of you are like, wow, I came the day we're talking about the end of the world. Whew! When I was in college at the University of Illinois, there was this guy named Preacher Dan who would stand on the quad in the middle of campus, and he would probably call it preaching. I would call it yell at people about how the end is near. His sermons were generally full of things about burning in hell and all kinds of just really great stuff like that. Watch out, the end is near. I wonder if any of us, as we think about things like the end of time, as we read about this verse here, if any of us have that kind of image in our heads when we think about that, like an angry preacher yelling at people about hell. Or maybe some of us read a book series like Left Behind, or watched a movie like A Thief in the Night that came out in the 70s about what the end might be like. And so now we're expecting it to look like that picture of things. Well, today and next Sunday, we're going to be looking at Matthew 24 and 25, where Jesus talks about the end of time and about his return. We are in a series of the book of Matthew, and we are now in the last week of Jesus' life. So this is the last major teaching section in the book of Matthew before Jesus dies. This is what he's talking about. I think sometimes when we read parts of the Bible like this that talk about the end of times, some of us read it like the guy from A Beautiful Mind, trying to connect everything we're reading to current events to deduce the exact date that Jesus might return. I'm hoping the result of our conversation today is not that. I don't want us to go there. I don't want us to all go home, pull out some red yarn and newspaper clippings and Bible verses and like get in our bunker, put up our bulletin board and try and figure it all out. That's not where I want to leave you today. That's not where we're going next week. Rather, I want to leave you with what I think Jesus was trying to communicate in his last teaching in the book of Matthew. Not be afraid, the end is coming, but more like, listen, the end is going to come one day. I've got it under control. So here's what to do in the meantime while you wait. As we study these two chapters together, there's two kind of theology words that I want to teach you because they'll help you as we think about this end times stuff. The first word is the word eschatology. You want to say that with me? Eschatology. One, two, three. Eschatology. Oh, see, look at you. Eschatology just means theology about the last things, the last things. Eschaton. You'll hear that word. Eschatology. It's just our theology about the last things. Throughout the Bible, we read a variety of passages that refer to the end of things, things about the new heavens and the new earth, things in the New Testament about the return of Jesus. These are all a part of our study of eschatology. The last book of the Bible, Revelation, contains a lot of what we look to now as 21st century believers in Christ to inform our theology about the end. One part of eschatology, right? So eschatology is the whole big, all the things about the end. One part of that has to do with God's physical return to earth. Now, in the Old Testament, that was called the Day of the Lord. It was referring to the day when God would come back to earth to set all things right. God would bring justice, he would bring healing, and he would bring beautiful life on earth in a way we haven't experienced since the Garden of Eden at creation. That was the Day of the Lord. Now, in the New Testament, The term used to refer to the day of the Lord is the Greek word parousia. That's another word for you, parousia. Parousia just means presence, coming, arrival, parousia. It's the same word that's translated in Latin as adventus. That's where we get the word Advent, right? So Advent being the season where we recall Christ's first coming and await his second coming, his parousia. So eschatology, whole big, all the study of all the things of end time. Parousia, one piece of that when Jesus returns. We good? Okay, cool. So these two words are going to help us understand these chapters better. In Matthew 24 and 25, Jesus talks about eschatology, the last things. He teaches his disciples about what will happen from then until the end of things when he returns. He teaches his disciples about what's going to happen building up to the end of history as we know it. And as a part of his teaching on eschatology, he teaches them about his parousia, his second coming. His parousia will be the final culminating event of eschatology, the last things. So Matthew 24 and 25 are set up like this. I think we have a slide. Okay, so all of Matthew 24 and 25 is teaching on eschatology, the end times. You can see the first part of Matthew 24 describes what's going to happen before the parousia, before Jesus comes back. The middle part of Matthew 24 is going to talk about, and we heard Rosemary read part of it, what it will be like when Jesus returns during the parousia. What will his return be like? Then the end of Matthew 25 tells what's going to happen after the parousia, after Jesus returns. And then what's leading up to that in the middle is, okay, so what do we do in the meantime? All right, so before, during, after, therefore. Got it? So that's Matthew 24, 25. Today, we're going to be talking about the first two. What's going to happen before Jesus returns and what's going to happen when he returns. So let's pick up Matthew 24 at verse 1. It says, Jesus left the temple and was walking away when his disciples came up to him to call his attention to its buildings. Do you see these things? He asked. Truly, I tell you, not one stone here will be left on another. Everyone will be thrown down. Jesus' disciples seemed to be sort of enamored with the grandiosity of the temple, which was understandable, okay? It was amazing. Herod the Great had poured all kinds of money and resources into building up this magnificent temple complex. In some ways, the temple was seen almost as invincible. It was God's presence with the people. The disciples looked at the temple the way people looked at the Titanic before it sailed. Before. The ship was incredible. It was huge. It was luxurious. It was unsinkable until it wasn't. And Jesus seems to be saying the same thing here. This impressive building is not going to last. This was a shocking thing to say. And Jesus' disciples had some questions. So in verse 3, Jesus is sitting on the Mount of Olives, and the disciples come to him privately and say, tell us, when will this happen, and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? So notice, Jesus' disciples connect here the destruction of the temple and the end of time. They're connecting those two things. That's because in Jewish prophetic tradition, there is both a now and a later to God's judgment and coming. These little judgments we see in the Old Testament, military losses, the exile to Babylon, they were seen as precursors to the ultimate end of time when God returns to completely judge the whole world and set everything right. So when the disciples hear that the temple is going to be destroyed, they see that as another little judgment. And they want to know, how many more little judgments are coming before the last day, before the day of the Lord, which they now connect to Jesus. It's also important for us to remember, again, that the book of Matthew was written after the destruction of the temple in AD 70, after Jerusalem had been destroyed by Rome. So the readers of Matthew already know that the temple is destroyed. And Matthew is just helping them make sense of the delay between this terrifying event and Jesus coming back. So Jesus says here, that there's two things we should expect As the end of time draws near, two things we should expect in this long era between his return to heaven and his return back to earth. Two things. We should expect chaos in the world and chaos in the church. We should expect chaos in the world and chaos in the church. The world will be in chaos. Jesus said in verse 4, "Watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name, claiming I am the Messiah, and will deceive many. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you are not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines and earthquakes in various places." Now, in Matthew's day, people read those verses and thought, yep, that's happening right now. In between the years 66 and 70, there were three separate instances of revolts against Rome, the last of which resulted in Emperor Vespasian and his commander Titus marching into Jerusalem, killing a million people, and eventually burning down the temple itself. There were certainly famines in those years of political upheaval, as food couldn't be sold freely from place to place and the land was constantly being destroyed. There were false prophets. The first century historian Josephus says that it was in fact a false prophet that led thousands of people to their death in the temple when it was burned. A man had told people that God said to him that they should flee to the temple and they would be safe. And then they all died. So in the same way, from the time of Jesus until today, Christians read these words in every century and think, yep, that's happening right now. And Jesus wants to make sure that we understand that that doesn't necessarily mean that he's returning right now. In verse 8, he says, all these are the beginning of birth pains. The beginning of birth pains. Jesus' point is, listen, until I return, things are going to be hard. While the kingdoms of this world are still running things down here, it's going to be bad. This is how it's going to be. That's why he uses plural words. Wars, famines, earthquakes, false prophets. This era of the end of times is a long one. And Jesus wants us to be prepared for that. I want to point this out because I want to make sure we understand that we are not supposed to read these words and go, oh, war is happening. Things are bad. Jesus must be coming back right now. Jesus said these are the beginnings of birth pains, not that these things signified his immediate return. So yes, he could be coming back tomorrow, or it might be another 2,000 years. It's pointless for us to try and deduce some sort of specific timing for the return of Jesus. In fact, next week, we'll talk about how Jesus specifically says we should not do that. That's not the point. Instead, the point of this passage, this word of truth, is included to remind believers of every generation that these kinds of things characterize this time in history before Jesus comes back. The point is for us to expect that things will be hard when people are trying to run the world. The point is for us to long for Jesus and his perfect reign. That's why Jesus says, don't be alarmed by these things. Listen, none of these things can disrupt God's plan to come back and set everything right. It doesn't mean this is the end. It's just what's going to happen until the end. So Jesus says there's going to be chaos in the world till he comes back. The second thing he says that will mark this era of end times is that things won't just be crazy in the world. The church is going to have a hard time too. Starting in verse 9, he says, then you'll be handed over to be persecuted and put to death, and you'll be hated by all nations because of me. At that time, many will turn away from the faith and will betray and hate each other, and many false prophets will appear and deceive many people. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. Matthew's audience already knew this truth. They knew that living as a Christian brought pain. In a society where they had to swear allegiance to the political leader or suffer, many Christians suffered. Many were imprisoned, tortured, or killed for their refusal to bow to any king but Jesus. At the same time, many others turned away from Jesus out of fear. Some Christians betrayed other Christians, turning them in to avoid their own imprisonment, their own punishment. Sometimes people would say things that weren't true and confused people. Some people decided to chase the things of this world instead of Jesus. Some people's love for Jesus grew cold. That was reality for Matthew's audience. Here in the United States in the 21st century, we do not face anything close to that kind of persecution for following Jesus. But following Jesus might still cost us. It might cost us comfort, security. Some of us might be tempted, like the early Christians, to abandon our love and our pursuit of Jesus and his kingdom to pursue things that the world says matter most. Jesus wants us to be ready for this temptation. But he doesn't leave us there. He has a promise. He says in verse 13, "But the one who stands firm to the end will be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come." He says, not only will your perseverance in faith be worth it for you, but in all this suffering, in all this persecution, through your faithfulness, the world will find out about Jesus. Matthew's readers were reading these verses in the context of the Jewish diaspora after the destruction of Jerusalem. The Jewish people, including the Jewish Christians reading Matthew's gospel, hearing Matthew's gospel, they were spread out all over the world. The persecution they encountered led to the most incredible spreading of the gospel our world has ever seen. In the same way, the Apostle Peter, when he's speaking to the early church in 2 Peter, he's talking to them about why it seems like Jesus is taking so long to come back. He says the delay is due to God's patience and love for the world, to give everyone a chance to hear the gospel, to acknowledge God's kingdom, to taste and see the goodness of God. And he says in 2 Peter 3, "Do not forget this one thing, dear friends. With the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years. And 1,000 years is like a day. The Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some understand slowness. Instead, he is patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance." So even when we don't understand why this era in history stretches on so long, while we don't understand why God continues to allow horrible things to happen and delays Jesus' return, Peter urges us to consider that God sees things we don't. That there is a loving, merciful reason why Jesus hasn't returned yet. So Jesus tells his disciples that in this era of history, in this lead up to the end, there will be chaos in the world and chaos in the church, that we should persevere. That's what he says will happen before Jesus returns. Then Jesus tells them what it's going to be like when he does come back during the parousia. In verse 29, he says, "Immediately after the distress of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from the sky and the heavenly bodies will be shaken. Then will appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. And then all the peoples of the earth will mourn when they see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other." Jesus is saying here, listen, it's going to be obvious when I come back. Matthew's readers, right, having been scattered all over the known world, might have been afraid that Jesus would return to Jerusalem and they would miss it. But Jesus says, no, you're not going to miss this. You'll see it. You're going to see it. In verse 29, Jesus is borrowing language from the book of Isaiah, when Isaiah speaks about the day of the Lord, the day that God returns to set all things right, to do justice. Jesus is saying that great day of the Lord you've been waiting for, that's going to happen at the end. And the day of the Lord is going to be me returning in the clouds. You're going to see it everywhere. You'll know. And again, borrowing from the Old Testament, in verse 30, Jesus speaks of his return in the clouds. He's directly alluding to prophecy about the day of the Lord from the book of Daniel. Daniel 7, we read, "In my vision at night I looked, and there before me was one like a son of man coming with the clouds of heaven. He approached the Ancient of Days and was led into his presence. He was given authority, glory, and sovereign power. All nations and people of every language worshiped him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that will not pass away, and his kingdom is one that will never be destroyed." Jesus is saying, this is what's going to happen when I come back. He's clearly asserting again that he is God, that his return is the long-awaited day of the Lord. And he makes clear, people are going to be afraid. It's terrifying when Jesus returns. See, the return of Jesus is good news for everything about us and in us that lives the way of the kingdom of God. Everything about us that is longing for and working for justice and peace. Those of us who long for those things, this is a good day. But for people who do not want to surrender their power, their possessions, for the things in us that benefit from systems that exploit others and that are unjust, the return of Jesus is terrifying because he's going to put an end to all those things that we like, even though they're not what he wants. That's why Rome does not want Jesus to return. God's sovereignty competes with Rome's claim of sovereignty. God's empire challenges Rome's imperial claim to rule, to control the whole world. When Jesus returns, it will be the end of Rome and every other kingdom like it and the establishment of God's life-giving reign. That's what's going to happen when Jesus comes back. So Jesus says, this is going to happen before I come back. This is what's going to happen when I come back. Why is he talking about all of this? Why is it the last thing right before his arrest and death? Why is this what he's talking about to the disciples? Well, verses 34 and 35 give us a clue. 34 says, "Truly I tell you, this generation will certainly not pass away until all these things have happened. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will never pass away." Listen, Jesus knows he's about to die, that his time with his disciples is running short. And he wants them to know some things with certainty. He wants his disciples to know that the era of the temple is coming to an end. He wants them to know bad things are going to happen. He wants them to be prepared. As he's been telling them about the destruction of the temple, he says, this generation will not pass away until this has happened. And within 40 years, Jesus' disciples and Matthew's readers have experienced all of these difficult things Jesus said would come. Jesus wants them to know, listen, you get that I'm the Messiah you've been waiting for, but the plan is probably going to confuse you. It's going to confuse you. I'm going to die. Then I'm going to leave. Then Rome's going to come and destroy the most sacred symbol of God's presence that we have. I want you to be ready for this. I want you to know God has this under control. It is all part of God's amazing plan to save the whole world. I know it's not how you would do things, but God has a plan. So when you see the temple destroyed, let that just be a reminder of everything I said that would happen. It will get hard. Bad things will happen, but let that just remind you of the time of history you're living in. It's the time between Jesus' first coming and his return, and there is purpose in it. Jesus wants his followers to know that despite the awful things they will face, that this current evil age has been given a boundary, a time limit, and it will come to an end. When Jesus says in verse 35, though heaven and earth will pass away, my words will never pass away. He says that to underscore the certainty they can have. They can trust his promises. He will return. He is coming back to rescue us. And that's the promise for us too. Jesus did not talk about what would happen before his return so that we could hole up in bunkers trying to figure out exactly the date that he's going to come back. His goal in telling his disciples these things, Matthew's goal in including them in his gospel, the big idea of this passage is as we wait for Jesus in this painful present reality, we can trust his promise to return. As we wait in this painful present reality, we can trust his promise that he will return. We can trust him. His whole reason for telling them what would happen is to prove that he is trustworthy, so that when it happened, his followers would not be surprised or alarmed, but would say, oh, right, Jesus told us this would happen. And if what Jesus said would happen now is happening, well, then we can trust his promise about what he said would happen later. We can trust his promise to return. We can trust his promise that he will come and rescue us from this mess of a world we're living in now. We can trust his promise to bring justice. We can trust his promise to bring healing. We can trust his promise to bring comfort. We can trust his promise to bring an end to death, abuse, injustice, poverty, and war. We can trust his promise that he will triumph over all evil and put it to an end. So while we wait, we can have confidence in his promise to return. That's why he told us these things. So as we live in this era, building up to the end, whenever it will be, what's heavy on your heart? Where do you need to be reminded of God's promises today? Where have you been sort of wondering, does God see this? Where have you been in pain and longing for relief? Where have you been grieving the injustice of this world? This morning, I want to assure you, God sees you. God sees you. He is aware of the pain. He's aware of the injustice. He is aware of the grief. God has not forgotten you. This morning, I want to assure you, Jesus is with you, and he knows what you're going through. He knows what it is to suffer. He knows what it is to endure injustice. He knows what it is to feel abandoned by God. He knows what it is to be lost in deep grief and sorrow. Jesus is with you, and he knows. And this morning, I want to assure you that you can trust his promise to make it right. He has given evil a time limit, and he will not let it endure forever. He is going to repair everything that is broken. He is going to bring justice. He will wipe every tear from every eye. He is on his way even now to rescue you. This is the hope we have in Jesus. King Jesus can be trusted. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you that you are trustworthy. Thank you that you told us what to expect so that we wouldn't be surprised by it. And so we would know that you see all of what's coming, and that we can believe that you are coming back. Our hearts cry out against so much that happens in this world that is so clearly not the way it's supposed to be. And we long for you to come and set things right. We long for you to keep cleaning out of our hearts everything that exists in us that is not of your kingdom. So Jesus, come. We long for you. We wait for you. And thank you for your presence and your promise while we wait. Amen.